Thank you very much. I'm going to take what's actually a very complicated subject with a lot of research behind it and try to boil it down to, you know, the 10-minute presentation, which is a very inadequate amount of time. So some of this will probably be well known to you, may seem overly obvious, but hopefully there'll be some of it that will also be new material. Okay, so I have no commercial interest to disclose. And the outline of what I'm going to address is to talk some first about how Americans currently think about climate change, and then talk a little bit about an important attribute of communication, which is the concept of frames, and the benefit of having a health frame in talking about climate change, and then talk some about effective communication approaches when it comes to addressing climate change, and then give a couple of examples of public health projects that are trying to protect people from climate change by focusing on the local environment. So the current and future health threats of climate change are very well documented, but they're not really understood by the public. Americans consistently greatly underestimate the current and future impact of climate change. They see it as remote, about polar bears, about glaciers, but not really about their own lives. And the concept of vulnerable communities, those communities that really need additional assistance to protect themselves of climate change, is also not really part of the conversation, except in public health circles, and it needs to be much more focused of the conversation. So climate change in the American mind is a series that some of you may have heard of. This is a project that's tried to characterize the American public's conceptualization of climate change. And it's been, there's a representative sample of the public that has been studied every year, twice a year since 2008, by my group at George Mason University. Actually, I've not been involved in that, but Ed Maybeck at our center, who started our center, and the folks at Yale have worked together on that project. And they've segmented the American population into six segments or audiences that are defined by their perceptions of global warming, and people in each segment have a distinct pattern of beliefs, behaviors, and policy preferences and levels of engagement with the issue of climate change. And this graphic kind of depicts what the six segments are. So over there on the left, the far left, is the alarmed group, and then you've got the concerned. And these are the two groups that have the highest belief in global warming, they're the most concerned about it, and they're most likely to already be engaged with it, that is, you know, following certain behaviors that they think will be helpful or protective and so forth. Then the next group there, that 23%, is what they have termed the cautious. And this group knows that global warming is happening. They think global warming is happening. And they're concerned about it, but they don't feel like they know that much about it. And so, you know, they're not necessarily very motivated to be engaged with it or to be involved or to take steps, you know, to act on it. And then there's a group that they've called the disengaged. And this group is mainly kind of dealing with day-to-day issues and survival and is much less likely to be thinking about it, you know, less aware of it and less involved. And then on the far right there, that 12% is what they have called the doubtful. And then on the far right there is the dismissive. And those two groups are the most likely to be deniers. They don't really believe that global warming is happening. They are less concerned about it, least concerned about it, and least motivated to be involved with it or to do anything about it. So people rely on frames to communicate, and frames are attributes of communication. Any given issue has many different facets that can be viewed and many different perspectives from which you can talk about the issue. And so any given frame is likely to engage some people, and it's going to have impact, little impact on others, and some it may even have a negative impact on. So climate change has been framed, you know, first and foremost as an environmental issue. It turns out about a third of the population are really engaged by environmental issues, but then there's another third of the population that think those environmentalists are all just, you know, nuts, crazy folks, and are much less engaged. But there's also it's also been framed as a scientific issue and a political issue. And, you know, we've all seen the impact of defining this as a political issue now over time. an economic issue. Recently, there were these big reports about the risk to the economy of not doing anything, the risk to big organizations and so forth, not doing anything about climate change, supported by major investment firms and former secretaries of the Treasury and so forth. So that's another frame within which to see it. And then there's the security frame. And the Defense Department has made really clear that they are very concerned about the security implications of climate change. And so some people see this as a security issue. And then there is the health issue. And it turns out that while when you ask people what they're concerned about when it comes to climate change, the first thing that comes to their mind is almost never health. So almost no, in thousands of people that they've talked to over the years, the first thing that people are likely to say does not include health. But if you ask voters about the importance of a whole variety of consequences of climate change, 75% of them respond that people's health is an extremely important or very important concern when it comes to climate change. And most people endorse the following statement: taking actions to limit global warming by making our energy sources cleaner and our cars and appliances more efficient, by making our cities and towns friendly to trains, buses, and bikers and walkers, and by improving the quality and safety of our food, will improve the health of almost every American. That statement is viewed positively across that spectrum of the six Americas, even by those who were at the doubtful end. So it's basically a health co-benefits statement. This has been referred to as co-benefits, and it plays very well across the segmentation of the audience. So the messenger is also very important, and most people are likely to accept information if they think it comes from a credible source. Well, who's a credible source to talk about health implications? Health professionals. And because of that, and the fact that health elicits positive responses from people when you talk about climate change in that framework, that health professionals are really an excellent group to convey messages about climate change. So health professionals have a special role to play. And there are three simple messages that seem to, be very helpful in talking about climate change as a health professional. The first is that there's a scientific consensus about human-caused climate change. Second is that climate change is harming people's health everywhere and now. But the third is that people and communities can take actions that will limit climate change, protect their health from the consequences of climate change, and make their communities healthier places to live. And these messages are persuasive because they focus on solutions, which brings people together, even when underlying thinking is very different. Working on a solution can bring people together to work together. It includes a value, and having some value in your message is often very, helpful. And it turns out that APHA actually commissioned a study on this, that the value of protection is one which also plays very well across the population. People relate to, protecting themselves, protecting others. And so talking about it in that framework is helpful. And gloom and doom is most decidedly not helpful. It's a barrier to action. It's associated with a sense of helplessness, denial, and avoidance. So, really important understandings there. So how do you get those messages out? Well, as public health folks, that's one of the main things that we try to do is to get messages out. So we contact people, we convene groups, and we collaborate to do that. So now I want to talk to you just about two interesting communities that have projects going that have been looking at vulnerable communities. The first is Ann Arbor, Michigan. The second is San Francisco. So Ann Arbor decided to address heat, air pollution, and environmental justice with one project that looked at the tree canopy in the community. And they thought about expanding the urban tree canopy as a way of creating a more healthy environment. And they essentially created a health impact assessment. And so they wanted to examine the social and the psychosocial and health benefits of targeted tree planting in residential areas of Ann Arbor that already had a low tree canopy and very vulnerable populations. And so they looked at those communities that had less than 30% tree canopy and two or more risk factors, including things like low SES, poor health status, etc. And they identified those as communities that were vulnerable to heat and would therefore benefit from more tree planting. And so they found six neighborhoods, and they are essentially working on the tree planting and then doing a health impact assessment to find out about it. So then San Francisco had what I thought was a really interesting study. This is Climate and Health, Understanding the Risk, an Assessment of San Francisco's Vulnerability to Extreme Heat Events. They got the CDC grant to do this. And first they started with an assessment. So they're trying to understand what the risk factors are for heat waves in California and in their area in San Francisco. Well, there, it turns out the lack of air conditioning is a big one. They've had more severe heat waves out there. And that folks who have chronic diseases, heart disease, pulmonary disease, et cetera, are, more vulnerable. People who live alone and are more isolated are also vulnerable. And then the fact that these heat waves have come into a community that didn't have heat waves before in homes that are very often not air conditioned, and so this big change in the climate has made, makes them more vulnerable. And so they identified locations, came up with something they called a heat vulnerability index, and the map that you see there now shows in red those parts of the city that were found to be most vulnerable to heat. And again, the factors were low SES, older age, social isolation, poorer air quality, higher density, and lack of vegetation in those communities. Then they actually measured the air temperature and land temperature around the city to find the places that are likely to have the greatest heat. And so they found a number of communities where that was the case. So they're south of Market, Mission, Potrero Hill, Bernal Heights, Bayview, Visitation Valley, Crocker Amazon, and Nob Hill. And then they put together the areas that had the highest risk with those areas that had the greatest heat. And from that, they came up with those parts of the city that should receive focus, and work to try to protect them. And the neighborhoods that they found were Chinatown, Civic Center area, Bayview, and the Mission District. And there are multiple strategies through which the vulnerable areas, vulnerable communities can be reached. So public health strategies, clinical strategies, and area-wide community policies. And so from a public health point of view, Philadelphia had a terrible death rate with heat waves back in the early 1990s. There were 118 people who died in a heat wave in 1993, and they decided to implement a heat warning system where the health department worked with the local media, worked with, block captains. They actually have block health captains there, and they identified people who were vulnerable. They got the word out on the TV and the radio, and they opened cooling centers. And with this system that has better communication and, messaging and people to look out for others in the community and so forth, they've actually driven down the mortality rate in the face of heat waves very substantially. So this is an article about that, and you can see that emergency cooling center sign there. From the clinical point of view, for those who are in the clinical environment, clinical centers often know their patients who have who live alone, who may be without air conditioning, and who will be more vulnerable in the face of a heat wave. And so with the kind of, and who have multiple chronic diseases. And so with the kind of care management that's developing now, these people can be specifically contacted when a heat wave is expected, and they could be helped to protect themselves, to hydrate, to avoid, too much activity, et cetera. And signs and things in clinical sites can also be useful. Then there are community strategies, and I think these are very well illustrated by the pictures that you see there. And so you've got, tree planting and greenery in general, green roofs, having water front areas be more walkable so that people can get out where the water tends to cool down the local environment, spend more of their time there when there's a heat wave. And these are all community strategies that are being taken in many places around the country and that, can be very helpful. So in conclusion, Americans don't generally associate climate change with health, but health is a very effective frame in which to address climate change and improve the environment. And health professionals can play a credible and very influential role when health is a part of the message, and we need to get the message right. We need to contact, convene, and collaborate, and avoid doom and gloom, and protect the vulnerable, and to do this, many more projects are needed. So thank you.